Well, good afternoon, Juno. It's Pat Moore, your host for Juno Afternoon, and today we'll be hearing from Katie Bowser about some upcoming things at UAS. Father Thomas Wise and Mary Walker will be in to tell us about One People, One Earth. There's a show on Saturday with that group. We'll hear about the week's fireside lecture at Mendenhall Glacier from Jim Garrity, and we'll find out about the upcoming Dennis Mamama Sky Photography Special show at the Marie Drake Planetarium Monday night at 6:30. We'll hear the Writer's Almanac, we'll have some music, and the rest of the show on KTOO's Juno Afternoon. Weather's mostly cloudy, scattered rain showers, highs around 40, snow level at 1,300 feet, east winds about 10 miles per hour. They'll become light and variable in the afternoon, and tonight mostly cloudy, and we've got the sun shining out there.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. This year, the Vatican will formally canonize its first Native American saint. WCPN's Brian Bull reports in the first of a two-part series.
Kateri Tekakwitha was a Mohawk Algonquin woman who lived in the 17th century in what's now New York and Quebec. Disfigured and partially blinded by smallpox, she embraced Catholicism and eventually left her tribe for a Catholic mission. She was revered for her kindness and work with the elderly and sick. Accounts say that when she died in 1680 at the age of 24, her blemishes miraculously disappeared, and followers later saw her in visions. Flash forward to winter 2006 and the town of Ferndale, Washington. Then 5-year-old Jake Finkbonner comes down with an aggressive, flesh-eating disease that spreads through his face and chest. The prognosis is grim, and a Catholic priest administers last rites. Jake's mom, Elsa Finkbonner, says a nun then visited the hospital and presented them with a small pendant with Kateri Tekakwitha's profile and name on it.
And she gave us a card with the prayer on the back, and I prayed that same prayer over Jake every day. It is my firm belief that she interceded when it came to healing Jake.
The Finkbonners say almost immediately the disease stopped progressing. 2 months later, after several reconstructive surgeries to his face, Jake came home.
I also think it was Kateri who kept the disease from going through my brain where it could have killed me there, or I could have been deaf, or I could have been blind. She probably stopped all of those possibilities so that I would be just like a normal child.
The Finkbonners are Lummi Indian and Catholic. Jake's recovery and its connection to Blessed Kateri spurred an investigation by Catholic officials. They determined that Jake's recovery was the second miracle attributed to her. Then last December, Pope Benedict XVI declared that Kateri Tekakwitha would become canonized, the final step to sainthood. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
Two Oklahoma tribes are asking a federal court for a partial summary judgment in their case against the state over water rights. As KGOU's Kirk Wartney reports, the request is intended to clarify their legal standing.
The Chickasaw and Choctaw Nations filed a motion this week in U.S. District Court in Oklahoma City, asking a judge to declare that the tribes hold the water rights and regulatory authority over water in southeastern Oklahoma under an 1830 treaty. Their filing comes a week after Oklahoma Attorney General Scott Pruitt asked the state Supreme Court to decide the tribal rights to the water in their historic territories. The motion from the tribes also asks the court to declare that the tribes' federal treaty rights preempt state law and that those rights are not subject to Oklahoma law. An attorney representing the tribes, Mike Burridge, says the state of Oklahoma's move to have the matter settled in state courts is a distraction. For National Native News, I'm Kurt Gwartney in Oklahoma City.
The Washington chapter of Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska are celebrating Native civil rights pioneer Elizabeth Paratrovich. A celebration will be held Saturday in Seattle. Alaska honors her annually with a state holiday. The Native woman worked to ensure passage of Alaska's 1945 anti-discrimination bill. On this day in 2009, on the centennial of Geronimo's death, his great-grandson and other descendants filed a lawsuit in federal court against Yale University, the secretive student society, Swollen Bones, and the federal government. The suit alleged the Apache leader's remains were stolen by members of the society in 1918 from Geronimo's grave in Oklahoma and taken to Connecticut. The descendants wanted to rebury the remains in New Mexico. The lawsuit was dismissed in 2010. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. Funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation.
Support for National Native News comes from the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller, and Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C.
Every Alaskan can support causes and organizations they care about when they file for a permanent fund dividend. Use PIC, CLIC, GIVE when filing online for your PFD. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska.
Native Voice.
It's 6 minutes after three, and you're in tune with KTOO-FM. Pat Moore, your host for Juno Afternoon today. You can celebrate America's rich black heritage with Sherry Patterson and a preview of the Jack's Gospel Music Workshop Choir in an evening authentic soul food and gospel music tomorrow, February 18th, from 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. It'll be held at the Clinkett and Haida Community Center at 3235 Hospital Drive. Wonderful menu, barbecued ribs, fried catfish, soul food menu. The tickets are $23 for adults, $13 for students, $6 college with ID, $6 to college with ID, I see. And they're at the door for $25 and $15. Kids under 5 are free. This is an annual scholarship fundraiser. It's sponsored by the Juno Black Awareness Association. If you'd like more information, you can call 957-0630 or email JunoBAA, the word JunoBAA, all one word, at gmail.com. My next guest is coming to us by telephone. Katie Bowsler, who does a lot of work here on the station, is also the, public affairs director at the University of Alaska Southeast, and she's going to tell us about an upcoming series of events that are happening at UAS. Hi, Katie.
Hi, Pat. How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing just fine. Sunny day here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, is it sunny downtown?
Oh, it's been lovely. I was down here a couple hours ago running around town, and the sun was just shining off the water, and it was beautiful. So sorry you're not getting it off the lake out there at UAS.
Yeah, we're kind of back in the clouds here. But anyway, for UAS Corner today, I've just sort of got so much going on with UAS related this weekend. You know, as a matter of fact, those gospel concerts that'll be on Sunday at 2 and 5:30 at the Jack, those are UAS is one of the sponsors of those. That should be just a wonderful event for people to attend. But I want to let you know that tonight there's a couple of events happening with UAS, one downtown and one out here at the campus. So tonight at 7 is the second night of the Banff Film Festival. This is the annual fundraiser for UAS student government. And the thing that's really neat about tonight, Pat, is that there will be two films by local filmmakers. Now, these guys made quite a cut because, you know, there were hundreds of films turned into Banff this year. First, they made the cut to get into the festival. Now they are part of the elite group of the worldwide tour. So Greg Chaney's condensed a 30-minute version of his film Journey on the Wild Coast, which tells the story of a couple from Seldovia who trekked from Seattle to the Aleutians along the coast in 2008 is one of the films, and also Alan Gordon, who is also an avalanche researcher out at the mine. He and his that's his day job, but for fun, he made a film called Blue Obsession about ice climbing on the Mendenhall Glacier, which is absolutely beautiful. So those are two of the films by local filmmakers that will be featured tonight at the Banff Festival at 7 at Centennial Hall. Also tonight at 7 is a Muslim Student Ambassadors Forum at the Egan Lecture Hall. This is organized by Juno People for Peace and Justice. Some of the students were guests on a Juno Afternoon, I think, with Amanda this week. I just want to remind people that this is a wonderful opportunity to hear from students from the Middle East. The forum will be moderated by our history professor, David Noon. And the students are going to discuss life in their home countries, their experiences in Juno, They are attending Thunder Mountain High School this year, staying with host families, and they're part of a Muslim ambassador program that's funded by the U.S. State Department. So that should be a great forum and very informative. And then Career Ed, which is, this UAS has three schools, Arts and Sciences, Career Education, and Education and the School of Management. The Career Ed, which is downtown, is celebrating National Career and Technical Education Month with some Saturday events for the month of February. So tomorrow there's two events, Pat, at 10 o'clock in the morning at the Bill Ray Center downtown, room 110. You can learn about careers in Alaska's healthcare industry and training programs that are available through the University of Alaska. That's 10 to 11:30 a.m. Bill Ray Center tomorrow. And then tomorrow afternoon is the third in our series of how-to sessions at the Technical Education Center downtown on the water. Tomorrow, this is a free seminar on changing your door threshold. And so this can save you money, too, because you can lose a lot of energy in your home if your door threshold isn't done properly. So that's going to be a two-hour session, how to replace your existing threshold. If you want more information on that, you can call 796-6126. That's tomorrow, 2 to 4.
Real interesting feature of that, by the way. They're going to have a bunch of commercially available door thresholds. And these are, they're expensive. And you don't see them in all of the stores around town. So ideas of how you can actually improve the structure is part of that seminar. So she's bringing in some thresholds from places that you don't see these in the stores in Juneau all the time. So there's some new technology here.
Okay, that's good to know.
Yeah.
And then Saturday, the 18th. At 8 o'clock is the Symphony Showcase at the Egan Library, and that's the annual chamber music concert by the Juneau Symphony. They'll present their finest musicians doing solo and ensemble pieces, so that should be really nice. And then getting into next week, Wednesday, the 22nd of February at 5:30, is the information night for prospective students, people who might be interested in our Master's of Arts in Teaching program. That's that one-year program where you can get your MAT degree in a year. Go ahead, yeah?
That's one of the very few one-year MAT programs in the United States, by the way. The sequence goes through two semesters of class time and one summer. And it's an amazing program because doing from a bachelor's to the MAT in 1 year is just is very hard to find. So it doesn't take a teacher out of the classroom for a long period of time in order to get the MAT. It's really an opportunity.
Yeah, that's it is a great program. It's very well regarded around the state and the country. So this information night is Wednesday, the 22nd of February, in the Hendrickson Building out here at the Auk Lake campus, in room 205. And that's good to know. And then I just want to give you people just a heads up that next weekend, a week from tonight, on the 24th of February, is we're back with our February in Films, rounding out that month for our Sound in Motion Arts at Egan series, and this will be the third annual, very popular festival of short films from the Alaska State Library Historical Collections. And some of the films include rare footage of Senator Greening in 1954, a National Park Service film on Glacier Bay from the 70s, and who knew an episode of the TV show Lassie was filmed in Juneau in 1968, and we can see some of that. So that's
is that with the original Lassie or one of the follow-on? I guess in that year it was a follow-on Lassie.
Well, you might know your Lassie trivia better than I do, but that's going to be a week from tonight at 7 o'clock in the Egan Lecture Hall. And then finally, we did talk about the how-to sessions celebrating National Career and Technical Education Month. Next Saturday is the last one, the 25th, and that'll be about how to get a building permit Getting a Building Permit Demystified is the title, and that'll be with Robin Gilchrist, who is our Associate Dean of Career Education.
Now, Robin was with us here, and she's put together quite a program. That business of going through getting a building permit, a lot of people don't understand the necessity for that or how to make that a lot easier. So she's put together, I think, a really useful session that a lot of people could use if they're thinking of building any addition to their property or putting up a deck or something like that in Juneau that's going to require a permit.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, quite the laundry list there, but if people want to, you know, get any more information about events at the University of Alaska Southeast, you can always go to uas.alaska.edu. We have press releases there on the homepage as well as a link to our calendar so you can get refreshed and reminded about the details of what's happening.
Well, what a laundry list. But the first of these events tonight is the conversation with the young ambassadors from Muslim countries. And that's
yes.
at 7 o'clock tonight, and also the second night of the Banff Film Festival downtown. There's a charge
Correct.
For the Banff, right?
Yes, yeah, it's at Centennial Hall. That is
yeah.
a fundraiser.
Yeah,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and also just on the Muslim students, there's a beautiful spread in this week's Capital City Weekly on these students in Juneau. So if you want more information about those students, be sure to check that out.
Katie, UAS is a really busy place. Thank you so much for kind of running us down the upcoming events so we have some way to poke it on our calendars and make some of these things.
Okay, thank you, Pat.
You bet. Thank you.
All right.
Music there by Scott Nygaard. It's 19 minutes after 3 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO FM. We're in the middle of Juneau afternoon. Weather forecast calls for mostly cloudy. We've got scattered rain showers coming up, but the sun is shining right now. The highs are around 40. Snow levels will be at about 1,200 feet for the rest of the day, and then the east winds somewhere around 10 miles per hour will become light and variable later this afternoon. For tonight, we're looking at mostly cloudy. Isolated rain and snow showers should start late. Lows around 29, northwest winds 10 miles per hour. In the evening, becoming light and variable. And then through the weekend, we've got much the same conditions, mostly cloudy. Rain showers Saturday afternoon, chance of snow Saturday night, rain and a chance of snow on Sunday, and the temperatures will probably stay up in the high 30s. So a good chance to maybe, I think Eagle Crest has still got a lot of snow, be warm and probably above the clouds up there and be really pretty for some skiing. I have two wonderful guests in the studio with me, Mary Walker, who is the Executive Director of Students of Creation, and Father Thomas Wise, an old friend who is now in Petersburg
and Wrangell,
who is a parish priest down there. And they are here to tell us about a set of events that started actually on Thursday. They are representing a program called One People, One Earth. What is the one in one?
Well, One People, One Earth, it's just basically two simple yet profound truths. And that's what we're trying to call attention to. I mean, we are one people, approximately 7 billion people sharing this one earth. And by 2050, the world population will swell to 9.5 billion people. So this earth will have to provide enough food, water, and shelter for 9.5 billion people. And so we're here to talk about how human-accelerated climate change is jeopardizing the capacity of the earth systems to provide these needs, these very important human needs. And it's bringing together, I've been doing this work for 5 years, and I've traveled all across the state, and this group of people that we have gathered are the most incredible, thoughtful people. I might say only ones in Alaska, but they're just absolutely amazing. And it brings together faith leaders, scientists, and Alaska Native leaders to talk about our moral obligation to act on climate change from the perspectives of faith, science, and traditional knowledge.
I think we hear much of the scientific side of this,
yeah.
And we also hear some, but not nearly enough probably, of the traditional, from the mm-hmm. traditional voice. But the faith voice is not articulated nearly as publicly, I don't think.
You're right, Pat. I don't think it gets enough airtime, personally.
Yeah.
Very few Catholics know that our own Pope Benedict made the Vatican City a carbon-neutral country within 2 years of being named Pope.
I didn't know that.
Right? He's done that by solarizing the entire roof of the Paul VI Audience Hall, which sits right next to St. Peter's Basilica. You know, they use electric cars. The Popemobile is still a carbon, you know. They couldn't get that little Mercedes to burn anything but diesel, I guess.
Yeah.
But he's doing these things very specifically. He was inspired by the environmental movement of the 1970s in Germany as a young priest and has continued to write about it and think about it and pray about it and actually act. You know, he saw the environmental degradation around his summer vacation spot as a kid and said, no, this is precious. The land is precious. And he started buying trees to reforest that area and continues to do so. So he's an amazing man who will continue to lead us. If people are interested, I just typed in, you know, Benedict or Pope Benedict and climate change, and I had hundreds of hits of recent things he said. He says something almost every month on climate change for the last 5 years.
There's much mention in the Bible about stewardship.
And let's talk about that.
Okay.
Absolutely.
It's a good word, but it's not a word that comes up in the discussion. So we hear about climate change and we hear about those things. But the word stewardship is not articulated in the headlines in the newspapers.
Correct. We just came from, Mary and I, over at Northern Lights United Church. We had a group of religious leaders, you know, a Muslim imam, Kirk Carnes, a Presbyterian leader, myself, and the new rabbi in Juneau.
Mm-hmm. We've had him on the air here.
Yes, so all three branches of Abraham were together under one roof,
uh-huh.
which I have been doing this for 5 years, as I said, and I have never had all four under one roof sharing this message to everybody. So this is truly extraordinary, and I'm so proud to say this happened in Alaska. So we get very proud.
And so we talked about stewardship from the biblical perspective, and I'll share a few of the insights we heard. The rabbi shared with us that sense of being, you know, a steward, right? We're in the English translation, it says to have dominion over the earth. And we love that, right? Mm. We're dominion-taking people. You know, we just want to take and manipulate creation to our end. Mm-hmm. And often, when avalanches come, we realize, or, you know, tsunamis, etc., that we don't have any power over this, right? That nature is so much bigger than we are. And he said something very interesting, that to have dominion is actually to be responsible for its care, like to be the gardener in the garden. That was Adam's responsibility. And we continue to have that responsibility. Jesus Christ came in the flesh that we might have no distance between God and us. The whole prescription of having a Sabbath rest is to rest from that manipulating of our environment. Right? We don't give our dirt rest, and so our crops are less and less nutritious. I mean, it's interesting, we've forgotten what our role is. There's the passage at the end of Genesis, the creation story ends with, and these are the generations of the creation. Like a genealogy.
Mm-hmm.
Like we're the youngest member and all of those generations ahead of us. And the Bible is all about honoring our elders. Native culture is about honoring our elders. And the created world is our elder. And how well are we honoring it as we tear it apart? You know, there's some reasonable expectation that we gain sustenance from the earth and material, you know, things. We need all the metals, you know, to make the wonderful technology we're using right now and everyone's listening with.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not advocating getting rid of all of that. But is there a way of taking it in a way that's gentler? May cost more, right? But is gentler on the environment? Because there's this real sense in the Bible that the gift of creation is not mine. It's still God's. And I'm in some way in charge of being that steward while the master's away. You know, that I'm in charge of the household, I have responsibility, and I'll be held responsible for how well I take care of it or not. And as we watch our climate change, and there's real and accurate changes that are measurable, you know, the Vatican has a whole set of scientists that have said exactly what the International Committee on Climate Change has come up with, that, well, we're causing this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they use fancy terms like anthropogenically caused, which means human caused, you know, by excessive burning of fossil fuels and a bunch of other complicated interactions. And it is a way complicated, you know, system. But there are little things we can do, and that's why this group is unique in trying to say, from our perspective as religious leaders, from our perspective as scientists, from our perspective as Native leaders, what can we do within our communities to encourage dialogue between these groups, which often I think the media portrays as being at odds to one another? The Vatican has no problem with scientists, you know.
So I'm sitting here with one question that's been working its way through my mind, and that is this. You're speaking to an audience of people who come to the session that you hold someplace. Are you reaching, or can your group reach, the people who need to take action? I mean,
if all we do is just
solarize our houses, if we all did that, that would be fine. But if only one or two of us solarize our houses as a result of this message, then have you accomplished? How can this group accomplish the kind of change that I think I hear you all, both of you saying, has to come about?
I would say our hope is to convey that taking action isn't about just caring for the earth. It's about caring for one another. That's what people need to understand. There are human lives at stake. And we know what to do. We know what to do. And we've done it before. When we had acid rain and sulfur dioxide, what did we do about it? We capped it. And we did it beautifully. And so here again, we can do the same thing by capping and reducing our carbon emissions. And again, I hope how we can reach people is by conveying this message that we have to care for one another. And one of the things that I always remember from the Bible is the Sermon on the Mount, where Jesus called, the one thing he told us to do was to love one another. Not blue people, yellow people, purple people, but all people. And by caring for creation, this is one of the best ways we can care for somebody we will never meet. Clean air, clean water, a bright future for our children. Who doesn't want those things? And that's what I want people to understand, that the action that climate change requires is the same that we're called to do for stewardship. And it doesn't mean doing without. It means doing it the right way. We know now that we are doing it the wrong way, and we have the opportunity to do it the right way. And I think with Alaska being this development state that we are, we have this phenomenal opportunity to be the state that we are and reduce our emissions and be a world leader on this. We have an opportunity to do that.
And so the next time you're going to reach out to an audience is coming up on Saturday, is that
yes.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and what time and where?
It's going to be at the UAS Egan Lecture Hall,
okay.
and it's going to be from 1 to 5. And I'd also like to call attention to Libby Roderick, is a wonderful singer-songwriter, and she'll be joining us, and she'll be our moderator, and she's going to sing for us. And the elders that'll be there, there's the elder Rita Blumenstein, who is just world-famous. She's one of the 13 Indigenous grandmothers. Elder Elaine Abraham and Larry McCooliff, who is an Aleut leader, and Dr. Terry Chapin, who is one of our most prominent scientists in the state. Dr. Franz Mutter will also be here from UAS. And then we've got Father Thomas, Reverend Carnes, and Imam Chowdhury.
Reverend Carnes is...
Protestant Reverend.
Presbyterian.
Presbyterian. Yeah. Okay. Okay, and there's no charge for this?
No, it's a free event. They can come for all 4 hours, or if you can only make it for an hour, you'll still have a valuable experience.
Wonderful. So I hear the passion with which you present this thing. I hope people hear that as well and join you on stage. Unfortunately, we have no more time, but I thank you so much for taking time out of the schedule that obviously involves both of you and coming down and telling folks about this opportunity.
Yeah, bring a friend. It's going to be great.
Thank you.
Extraordinary. Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 17th of February, 2012. It's the birthday of the crime novelist Ruth Rendell, born London, 1930. Her mother was ill with undiagnosed multiple sclerosis, her parents unhappy with each other. And so the girl began writing about her life as if it were a story and happening to someone else. She was a reporter for a small London newspaper, for fun decided to write a detective novel entitled From Dune with Death, starring Chief Inspector Reginald Wexford. It came out in 1964. The inspector was overweight, slow, sloppy, but a thoughtful man, and she kept on writing. The latest Inspector Wexford mystery by Ruth Rendell, entitled The Vault, it came out last year. Ruth Rendell, who describes herself as a workaholic, obsessed by routine, who writes for about 4 hours every morning and then eats the exact same lunch, bread, cheese, salad, and fruit. She has produced an average of 2 books per year for almost 50 years and says, "I am quite happy to go on doing what I am doing now. For the rest of my life, I don't see why I should stop." And it's the birthday of science fiction writer Andre Norton, born Alice Mary Norton in Cleveland, 1912, changed her name to Andre because she thought she'd have better luck selling her books as a man instead of a woman. She wrote spy thrillers, historical fiction, and then her first sci-fi, Star Man's Son, 2250 A.D., came out in 1951. And she stuck with science fiction after that. Wrote more than 130 novels in her 70 years as a writer. Here's a poem for today by Maxine Cumin entitled Getting Through. I want to apologize for all the snow falling in this poem so early in the season, falling on the calendar of bad news. Already we have had snow, lucid snow, surprising snow bees and lamb's wool snow. Already snows of exaltation have covered some scars. Larks and the likes of paisleys went up. But lately, the sky is letting down large print flakes of old age. Loving this poor place, wanting to stay on, we have endured an elegiac snow of whitest jade, subdued biographical snows and public storms, official and profuse. Even if the world is ending, you can tell it's February by the architecture of the pastures. Snow falls on the pregnant mares, is followed by a thaw, and then refreezes so that everywhere their hill upheaves into a glass mountain. The horses skid, stiff-legged, correct position, break through the crust, and stand around disconsolate, lipping wisps of hay. Animals are said to be soulless, unable to anticipate. No mail today, no newspapers, the phone's dead, bombs and grenades, the newly disappeared, a kidnapped ear go unrecorded, but the foals flutter inside warm, wet bags that carry them 11 months in the dark. It seems they lie transversely, thick as logs. The outcome is well known. If there's an April, in the last frail snow of April, they will knock hard to be born. Getting Through, a poem by Maxine Cumin from her Selected Poems 1960 to 1990, published by W.W. Norton, used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. iPad users can download the three most recent issues of Poetry Magazine, celebrating its centennial in 2012, at poetryfoundation.org. Written by Priscilla Kinter. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Sneed Collar has been riding at the bottom of the sea. He will take us on a research expedition diving in the Johnson Sea Link submergible off of the Bahamas. In this presentation, you will see life far below the ocean surface, focusing on bioluminescence. Sneed is the author of award-winning children's science books. Monday, February 20th, 6:30 at the Douglas Library, sponsored by the Friends of the Juneau Public Libraries.
It's about 23 minutes to 4 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO FM, and this is Juneau Afternoon. And with me in the studio now is Jim Garrity, who's going to do a really interesting talk tonight at the regular ongoing Mendenhall Visitor Center Fireside Series. Jim has a wonderful photograph that I've taken a look at of President Harding standing in front of the glacier in 1923. He visited Alaska. I don't think anybody knows that, or I'm sure people know of it, but they probably know little. What are you going to talk about, Jim?
I'm sorry, I didn't catch
you. What are you going to talk about tonight?
Oh, well, basically it's a chronological photo display of his 15 days here in Alaska as he traveled around. He didn't follow the published schedule, and he didn't go to all the places that he had scheduled, and he went to other places that weren't scheduled, and oddly, no one ever wrote a whole article about his trip up here. And so I've been collecting photos and a series of PowerPoint slides showing his trip around the state and how very different things were and yet very much still Alaska.
Jim, how'd you get interested in this?
Well, actually, oddly, you mentioned that one photo. I did a presentation a number of years ago about tourism at the Mendenhall Glacier, and by far and gone, the most famous tourist we ever had at the Mendenhall Glacier was the President of the United States in 1923. And so because there was very little in any archives about that trip, as I got opportunities and people offered to sell me photos and things, of I would see part of Harding's trip to Alaska, and I would buy that and donate it to the state collection. And so when Marion, Ohio Historical Society asked for someone to come from Alaska to speak about Harding, the state asked if I would. And so I went down there and spoke about his trip up here and showed photos. And people have been very, very interested in Alaska. And a lot of people have heard about Harding's trip but know almost nothing about it, including a lot of the people that live in the small towns that he visited.
In the photo that I've seen, he's standing in front of the glacier with a party of people that include, I think, the then territorial governor of Alaska.
Yeah, Scott Bone.
Yeah, and their wives, I think. And
Mrs. Bone, I mean, Mrs. Harding was there, but Mrs. Bone wasn't.
Ah, okay.
Marguerite Bone, the governor's daughter, was standing next to him.
Ah, okay. And behind them is the glacier.
Yes.
They're standing about where the visitor center is today, right?
No.
Or a little bit forward of that?
It's about 1,000 yards from where the visitor center is now.
Toward the glacier or away?
Away from the glacier towards Thunder Mountain.
Toward Thunder Mountain. So that was where the glacier face was at the time in 1923.
Yes.
This was the first time in the caption of the picture, the newspaper story that accompanied it, I think, said this was the first visit of a president to a glacier.
Yeah.
So... and I'm assuming since then there have been presidents who have visited glaciers. But
oh, sure.
Have other presidents come to
Alaska?
Not to Alaska, but to the Minnesota Center?
I don't believe so.
Ah, okay.
I don't know of anyone else. But Harding was here 15 days, and lots of presidents have done some fly-ins, jump off the plane, press the flesh, get back on the plane, and leave. But Harding's 15 days, I'm pretty certain, would add up to more than all other presidents combined.
So we were a tourist destination for presidents in the 1920s.
Yeah, and he was very interested in Alaska, lifelong interest, and he was very influential in Alaska.
Now, Harding died shortly after this visit, right?
Yes.
Yeah, he went back to Washington, D.C. and
No, he was in San Francisco.
Oh, okay,
died.
Okay. And there's some mystery surrounding that?
Not really.
Not really.
His doctor that he had accompanying him, of course, medicine, you know, 1923.
Yeah.
Medicine was very, very different than it is today. And the doctor that he had with him really wasn't even qualified then. And so when Harding started having heart failure symptoms, he was in kind of a panic and didn't have any idea why the president was sick. And so... He said that it was food poisoning.
Huh.
And that was very popular in Alaska. I think at least four different communities claimed to have poisoned the president.
Wow. A different time. And what a president who can spend 15 days in Alaska and who can get away from the Secret Service entourage by walking around the backside of the train and hopping in a car.
Right.
It's not that way anymore.
No, it certainly isn't. You know? And he spent a lot of time just wandering around the streets and stuff like that by himself, you know. So, and people didn't accost him politically or anything. They didn't come up and make demands or anything like that. So, Alaska has a long history of respecting people's privacy, more so than most places.
So, Jim, you collected these photographs. You're going to show this sequence tonight. Are you working on any other projects of historical photography right now?
Always, yeah.
No.
Yeah, I probably have a dozen different projects.
Anything we can peek over your shoulder and hear about?
Well, I'm always interested in Mendenhall Valley. That's where I grew up. And there was very, very little of it in the newspaper. Most anything that happened past Salmon Creek was too far out from Juneau to make the paper. So people's houses would burn down, wasn't even in the papers. So always interested in the first homesteaders out the road. And that's a personal passion for me.
If people have photographs and are interested in passing them on to you or letting you look at them, is there a way they can get hold of you?
Sure. I'm the owner of Maritime Hydraulics. Okay. It's the only hydraulic shop in Juneau. Mm-hmm. And I'm in the phone book under Garrity. And, you know, the City Museum and the State Museum and all.
Are grateful for your presence, I should imagine. So the program tonight is at 6:30, and then it repeats, I think, at 8 o'clock. Is that
yes.
right? Yeah. So mm-hmm. there's two fireside talks, and you'll be showing a series of PowerPoints and passing some photos around or not?
Oh, no, I won't be passing. It's not PowerPoints. And okay. It's about 200 photos.
Uh-huh. So the fireside lectures are really a wonderful feature of Alaska.
I love them.
It's kind of like going to somebody's house and sitting and listening to somebody talk about things that they love. So
you get to see the impassioned works of years of study and stuff like that from, mm-hmm. from some of the world's foremost experts.
Right. Well, I'm really glad you're doing this. I would encourage a lot of people to come out and view the collection of photographs of President Warren G. Harding visiting Alaska for 15 days in 1923. 6:30 and 8 o'clock tonight at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitors Center.
Yes.
Thanks, Jim.
Thank you.
Music by Tingstad and Rumble at about 12 minutes before 4 o'clock. And you're in tune with KTOO-FM, Pat Moore, your host for Juneau Afternoon. We have a guest in the studio and a guest by telephone, and we're going to be hearing about a wonderful show that is coming up on Monday night at 6:30 at the Marie Drake Planetarium. Steve Kosas is here in the studio with me, and Dennis Mamaman is on the telephone.
This is Steve. I'm a volunteer at the Marie Drake Planetarium, and we're pleased to have a visiting astronomical lecturer, Dennis Mamana, coming Monday, 6:30 p.m. at the planetarium, and he's going to present a show on the science of the Northern Lights and also how to photograph the Northern Lights. So we're quite excited about having this visit from Dennis. And it's a little bit of a break of tradition because for Dennis's visit, we will be charging admission. It'll be $5 for individuals and $10 for a family. And that's to cover the expense of bringing Dennis to Juno. Dennis uses a variety of instruments for his astrophotography. He uses still cameras without long telephoto lenses, but he also does use telescopes to take some of his pictures. But pictures of the Northern Lights are typically done without large telephoto lenses because they cover quite a large area of the night sky. So his exposures would be time exposures using typically normal lenses or lenses with just a small telephoto range.
Okay, I think Dennis has joined us now. Dennis, do we have you yet?
Yes, you do.
Oh, good. Thank you so much. So, Dennis, we've been talking while we were playing telephone games about the photography that you do that involves shooting the Northern Lights. And I wanted to ask you, I looked at some of the pictures that you've taken on your website. You lead an Alaskan tour each year, is that right, or periodically?
Well, yeah, I mean, I come up every year.
Uh-huh, and take people out to teach them how to take photographs of the night sky?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I lead these public tours, for anybody who wants to join us, and we go up to typically up to Fairbanks, and I teach them a little bit about the lights and how to view them, but also how to photograph them on their own.
And will you be doing that as a part of this trip?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm so looking forward to it. It's been a whole year.
Are you? Is your tour full, or is there a possibility that someone could join you from here?
Well, this year it is full, but next year I do have several. I have a couple of things. One going up to Alaska, possibly one other one, which I can't talk about at this point because we don't have any details down. But next year, I guarantee I will be back up in Fairbanks again.
And the talk that you're going to give on Monday night is calls on the photography that you've done. You'll be showing a lot of that.
Oh yeah, I'll be talking a little bit about the lore and the lure of the lights and how to photograph them. Now I know Juno has the weather issue, and of course you're quite a bit farther south than Fairbanks is, but you do get the lights, and I'm sure a lot of your folks have seen them. But photographing them is a little trickier.
Dennis, about a week ago, there was a gigantic solar flare. Did that move the Northern Lights far enough south that you got some photos?
Oh, yeah. I didn't get anything from here. Occasionally, they can actually work their way down to the southwestern U.S. or even down into, the southern states. We didn't get anything here. I suspect the whole northern tier of states in the U.S. got something. I don't know whether you guys did in Juneau because of the weather, but it certainly, every time that sun erupts and sends material out into space, there is a good likelihood that we're going to get lights, especially up in Alaska.
Steve, it was cloudy, I think, in Juneau, is that right?
Yeah, I was out every night during that.
Well, there you go.
Weather.
See, that's... Yeah. Yeah. Mother Nature has a sense of humor, doesn't she?
Yeah, she sure does. The lights in Fairbanks are much easier to predict because almost any night around local midnight when the auroral oval is tilted over far enough, then you've got a beautiful light show.
Exactly. You almost always get lights there. The question, of course, is how dramatic do you want them to be? And so, the idea is if you do go up north to around 64 degrees north latitude, it's probably around the best places to be. You want to plan on spending at least 5 to 7 days because you do have weather issues, of course, but there's some nights the aurora will be there, but it won't do anything. And some nights it will be quite dramatic. So you figure 3-4 nights out of the 7, you should be in pretty good shape.
What would you say was the most spectacular opportunity you've had to photograph the Northern Lights?
Well, it was back in 2001, the last time we were near a solar maximum.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in Fairbanks, in fact, at that time. And this was the most incredible opportunity to photograph the lights, and I never got one single photo. And the reason was they were so incredible, so bright, so colorful. They were dancing everywhere, every color you can imagine. I literally forgot how to operate my camera. And I've been doing this for 45 years, and I couldn't remember how to operate the camera. I was completely stunned by these things. So, in fact, the next night, of course, we got some really good ones as well. But that first night, I remember, I was completely blown away by these things.
I can exactly catch what happened to you. I've been so completely taken. I used to live in Fairbanks, and I've been so completely taken by the Northern Lights that I almost forgot to zip up my coat and stay warm enough not to freeze. A really spectacular show is amazing. You said solar maximum. I don't know if our listeners know about the 11-year solar cycle. We're starting up toward what may be the peak of this kind of we're about a medium cycle, I think, at this point, right? So
right,
next year...
I think early 2013, we should be near the top, and then we start a gradual decline as well. So this year, next year, the following year should be excellent. But, of course, you know, we can't really tell when we're at the actual top until after it's over.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things we don't know. We can't predict. All we can say is, in hindsight, yeah, that must have been the maximum.
Well,
but we're thinking right now it's going to be around 2013. But usually what I have found is the year or two after solar maximum is also very good. It declines much more slowly than you would expect. So I guess we'll just wait and see.
Yeah. Have you worked at all with the Geophysical Institute at the University of Alaska Fairbanks?
Oh, I'm sorry, what was that?
I asked if you had worked at all on the Northern Lights with the Geophysical Institute at the University of Alaska Fairbanks.
Well, I mean, I don't know much about it. I mean, I've been there, but that's it. Yeah.
No. Their website has a forecast page I looked at today, and it had the Northern Lights as being active. So they would be visible in Juneau tonight if it is clear, which I don't think it's forecast to be.
Unfortunately, no. The forecast basically is for it to be mostly cloudy tonight and Saturday and Sunday. So we're not going to see
and
it.
And Monday.
Yeah, yeah. So.
Well, keep your fingers crossed. you never know.
Maybe
the forecast is for fairly active the next couple of nights, and then, you know, we'll see what happens in the next week or so. But, you know, yeah, you do have to have clear skies and the aurora. And like I said, Mother Nature has a sense of humor. Usually she'll give us one or not the other, one but not both. So sometimes she could be pretty nasty.
Dennis, we have a little more than a minute left. Your show is, what time are we talking about?
It's February 20th.
I think Steve needs to mention.
Yeah, Steve?
The show will be February 20th, Monday, at 6:30 p.m., and there's a small admission charge to pay for Dennis's expenses of $5 for individual, $10 for family.
Wonderful. And this is at Marie Drake Planetarium.
Marie Drake Planetarium, downtown Glacier
right.
Avenue, Marie
right.
Drake Building.
I think a lot of people know where that is because we have a weekly kind of star show in there that a lot of people attend.
Which we will be doing February 28th is our regular public show, and that will be February 28th, Tuesday, 6:30 p.m., and it's entitled Big Bang for Beginners, and that show is free.
Okay, good enough, Steve. All right, well, Steve, Dennis, thank you very much. I'm sorry we don't have more time to spend on this wonderful topic. The Northern Lights are a uniquely Alaskan event, and it's wonderful to have someone who has photographed them and can teach us a little bit about how to take really spectacular photos of them. We're looking forward to your visit, Dennis.
Thank you very much. Hope to see everybody in Juneau.
You bet.
Thanks, Pat.
You're in tune with KTOO FM. We run a series of translators around the valley. We have K276AF at 103.1 in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek. We're on K269AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens to us on K201AM at 88.1. K220BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. And Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait are served by K210AS at 89.9.